Welcome to Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson with our host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today we're going to continue our program titled Dealing with Deployment. A few weeks ago, my dad sat down in the studio with three amazing military families who have been sharing with us about their experiences of being in the armed forces. The military is tough on families, but all three of these couples have not only navigated, but succeeded in serving our country while keeping their families intact. So let's get to the program. Here is my dad, Dr. James Dobson, as he interviews Matthew and Ariel Holcomb, Jonathan and Beth Dowdy, and Adam and Hadassah Stoll on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Adam and Hadassah, have there been difficult moments for you? Hadassah, I'll ask
you. I'm going to go first.
Well, not really. I feel like with the deployment that we went through, I mean, being a single parent for that amount of time is always taxing. There are definitely some stretches of time that I just lost motivation to really get through much. I mean, I had my brother living with me at the time. He was 19 years old, and he helped me around the house. He was that male presence where I didn't have to necessarily go out and mow the lawn and do that kind of stuff. So that took off some of the pressure. So I really haven't. I feel like we've been super blessed with just how things have turned out for us. And
well, you had three kids to deal with. That is a challenge in it of itself.
It definitely was challenging at times. I will not argue with that. So I'm thankful to have him back because there's just nothing like having that backup, that husband, that father figure in the house to back up the mom.
Adam, how hard was it for you to say goodbye to your children?
It's, that was difficult. It's difficult every time, long before I'd ever considered being a Marine, but I grew up Mennonite, so that was never really an option anyway. But long before I wanted to do that, I wanted to be a good dad. I wanted to be a great husband and a good father, and I didn't know my wife, and I didn't have any kids, so it was kind of hard to see that was going to look
all
like.
Of that.
So to say goodbye to them when I've already, like, all right, son, daughters, I've neglected you for the last, year, and now I'm going to neglect you even further. That's tough. That's tough. Mm-hmm. And to just kind of leave everything, like, there's so much that's unfinished. Like, you try to prepare, you try to make sure everything's taken care of, both financially and just, interpersonal type stuff. Hey, there's no unfinished business, nothing that we need to talk about or discuss, kind of thing. And you can't get to that point.
Well, let me ask you the obvious question. It's a hard one. Have you ever looked at your military career and said, maybe I should have gone another direction?
I've faced that a bunch of times, but I've had the opportunity along the way numerous times to make the decision to continue. Probably the biggest was when we finished flight school. You're offered your wings, which you've just worked 4 years to get, so
yes,
you're probably going to take it. But at that point in time, my commitment to the Marine Corps had come and gone. So had I turned down my wings, my commitment would have ended at that point. I would have just been like, done, go home.
You could have done it.
I could have done that. And I had thought about it. The company that I had been a part of prior to the military had taken off, and they were very successful. They were doing great things. And I felt like I could go back to that and make a lot more money. But no, we prayed about it. We talked about it. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I didn't come here to quit. I didn't come here to, I came here to, for a lot of reasons. But a lot of these hardships, a lot of what has been so difficult are the very reasons why I can see why God might have brought me here to begin with. Things in my life I had to fix, the time management, the just basic discipline and maturity, things where I'd been able to kind of get by with less effort on something than what I should have put into it. It just wasn't going to cut it in the military.
How much did your love for country and your desire to serve it play? How big a role did that play in your decision?
I would say that has been a very, I don't know that I would say it was the primary reason initially, but it's been very staying, if that's the appropriate term.
You felt a sense of mission?
I do. I love what we have here. I absolutely love the idea of this country and love what it was founded, the thought that was put into this, the work and the lives that were lost into allowing this country to be what it is very inspiring to me, and it's absolutely worth defending. You know, a lot of times we talk about defending our way of life. Well, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, and a lot of our ways of life that I'm not here to sacrifice my family and myself to defend some of that. You know, that's not why I do it. But what this country is and that oath that we swear to defend the Constitution, absolutely. I love it.
Matt, I ask you the same question. What role did patriotism play in your decision to have a military career?
Well, I'd say it was initially the primary role. Yeah, I joined 6 years after September 11th, 2001. I nearly just quit college and joined after that. But I think that was really the catalyst that got me thinking about it. And we talked last night how I mentioned about joining before Errol and I got married, and you know, she said she might have to reconsider my offer. But
and he waited till we were married.
Yeah.
He didn't tell you to.
He didn't. But he also, like you said,
you're kind of a rascal here, Matt.
Yeah, he's quiet.
You had this plan that you didn't share.
Yeah. I waited till she was
on board. It was true. Yeah. Just like you said, Shirley came willingly. I came willingly. It took some time. But I did.
But that was, you know, had the biggest effect initially, I think. And I don't know if it's the same experience for the three of us here, but it's pretty easy to get kind of cynical in the military.
Because?
Well, because of the hours you put in, because of the time you spend away from your family, because not a lot of people share the same patriotic spirit, because you see your country going in directions that you don't agree with. You wonder sometimes if you are fighting for the right things.
Well, that bothers me too. I'm not in the military, but I have the same concern. I love this country, and I love what it's founded on.
Absolutely.
I love what our founding fathers did for us and for the Constitution and the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And I just see it being, if not destroyed, at least severely damaged, mm-hmm. and wondering if it can ever be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that it can. I know that the Lord has blessed this country, but I don't know how he can bless it when we have killed 56 million babies. I just don't know what direction we're going. Jonathan, how about you? I asked the same question.
For me, patriotism was actually a fairly strong part of why I joined. I joined to serve. I wanted to serve something greater than myself. And I went through 4 years of training myself. I went to the Air Force Academy, not knowing what I was going to do when I got out. I just knew that I was going to serve. So I wasn't, going for a specific job or anything like that. And I happened to end up becoming a fighter pilot, which I consider a blessing. But I can certainly understand that Matt brings up a good point, is that you reach a point in your military career where, as a Christian, you wonder if you are where God wants you to be. Because certainly we all understand that, the Bible says we should honor him and then our families. And then we start seeing that it's difficult to honor God sometimes in the military because it's not a culture that is necessarily God-honoring. And it pulls us away from our families sometimes. So how can I say God wants me to honor and love and protect my family while I'm being torn away from my family? But at the same time, what would the military be if all the Christians took that easy way out and said, well, I can't be in the military because I need to value my family first? So in that regard, there's a sacrifice to be a Christian in the world, to be salt in the world, where there might not be the best place for a Christian sometimes, but the Christian needs to be.
Beth, your take on the same subject.
About patriotism or Christianity?
About how you felt about Jonathan making career out of the military. You knew that before you married him, did you not?
We were both active duty when we met and married. So I knew what I was getting myself into, and I knew what a retired career would be like. I don't know that we had decided when we got married that he was going to retire, but it just seemed like a great option. We were both very patriotic. We loved the Air Force. We liked traveling, and we're enjoying it. And then also just the medical benefits, especially for our youngest son now, will be very good for retirement. But there are times when it's hard. I mean, when I separated 10 years ago, the culture was so different than it is now. The things I was dealing with in my job are just accepted and welcomed now in the Air Force than they weren't then. So culturally,
Can you be more specific about that?
When I separated 10 years ago, don't ask, don't tell was still in effect. And there were some cases of people being considered for separation due to homosexual activities. Is what yeah. I can say now. And now that is not the case in the military. You know, and even just that culture yeah. and mindset had changed.
It's actually gone the opposite direction to the point where a Christian says on Facebook, you know, something about homosexuality, someone who's not even in the military complains about it to their commander and they get punished for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and also just things like people would talk about God and, you know, in the office or whatever, and just other conversations were happening and people were not threatened by that. It was much more open. And the impression I get now is that people feel frightened and censored. And that's a really big change.
Mm-hmm. Does the chaplaincy help? Are you involved in the services and the things that are provided by the chaplaincy?
Like everything in the military, the chaplaincy runs the gamut. There are some outstanding chaplains who could probably pastor their own mega churches if they wanted to, and there are some chaplains who you kind of wonder if they have any faith at all. And that varies from one location to another. So we've been in places where we were part of the chapel community and we're dedicated to that, and we've been to places where we walked in the chapel, walked back out and never went back again, just because, just like everything, there are millions of people in the military and there are personalities of all kinds.
The chapel where we live now is very good, but we don't live very close to base. So we have a fabulous church that's a lot closer to where we live. But the chapel has been good, and they've offered a lot of help. And just even times I was struggling during some pregnancy with some depression, chaplains were there for me. So I always appreciated that.
And the chaplains face the same challenges mm-hmm. that many of us do with regard to faith. I mean, even some chaplains have stood up in religious services on Sunday morning and said religious things, Christian things, and then later on in the week have a commander come to them and say, I need to talk to you about what you said on Sunday. And so even that part of the culture in the military is being affected by the pressures from outside of it.
That's very disappointing.
It is.
It is.
Mm. I think we see, I know it's definitely the case in the Marine Corps, that the chaplain is a go-to for a lot of things. So a lot of issues that, you know, we want to have our finger on the pulse of the unit and what's going on. And I got a Marine that's struggling with this or this. Well, now I can recommend him to different family support type services here and there, or I can recommend him to the chaplain. He's afforded certain protections. There are things he can tell the chaplain that the chaplain does not have to go and immediately report. He can keep it to himself. So there are some open doors there for ministry in the military if you've got a good chaplain. And there are a lot of things we'd refer them to. But on the other hand, because that's available, I would say I don't think there's much tolerance at all for officers that are, you know, you're not a chaplain, to be giving any kind of spiritual guidance or to be talking just in general, you know, race, religion, politics, three big taboos. You're just not going to go there or you're asking for trouble. Now, there are times.
And religion is one of them.
Absolutely.
If I come to you and I say, Adam, you've got something that I want. I see a difference in you. I see a faith. I see strength that I don't have. And I don't know anything about who Jesus is. What can you tell me?
I would say, assuming it's a, you know, not a peer, a subordinate, something like that, I would say, well, I hope what you're seeing is Christ in me. That is a product of my beliefs. It's not me that you're seeing. If you want to talk about that, then we can definitely talk about that sometime. But that's probably not going to happen at work. It's not going to happen while I'm wearing a uniform and in that setting. And it may. You know, I don't know. The time may come.
Does that mean after you get out, or does it mean when you take the uniform off?
It's just you're kind of towing a fuzzy line there, where as long as nobody complains, you're going to get away with it. I would say the majority opinion is still that this guy isn't a guy we're worried about. This guy, that he may be spreading the gospel, he may be loving Jesus and all that. That's fine. He's not the guy that's really creating division and problems in our unit. There will be some people, though, that will see even any hint of that. The wrong person hears that conversation going on, and it can just blow the situation up to, you know, all of a sudden I'm not in that position anymore where I can have those conversations with those Marines. So something I have been able to do, you know, when we're doing guided discussions and things like that, and they'll ask us, we try to put our NCOs in charge of these discussions to kind of lead the mentorship. And then we, you know, we'll sit back and observe. I got staff NCOs that'll kind of keep an eye on what's going on. And then I may have a few things to say at the end. I try not to dominate that guided discussion. Yeah. But there are times where I can say, you know, we're talking about alcohol. We're talking about, you know, in a deployment, you know, say we're somewhere in Asia and we know what's going to happen when these guys get to Thailand or get to place in the Philippines or whatever, what some of the temptations that they're going to be faced with, I guess. So I can recommend, you know, I can't preach my morality, but I can say, you know, hey, as a technique, consider this.
Well, that's a shame. That's really a shame. You know, I'm reading a book right now. I can't remember the exact title, but it has the word valor in it. It's about the Battle of the Bulge. And it's written by a Christian. It's an outstanding book. I haven't finished it, but it's outstanding. And it talks about the role of faith and how it got those men through the most difficult, one of the most difficult situations in World War II, and how they depended on the Lord for strength. And it's just a tremendous evidences of strong faith among both the enlisted men and the commanding officers. And that has apparently changed. I think the answer that you gave me is that you have to be very, very careful in talking to me about your faith and about sin and about redemption and about what Christ can do for you and why he died on the cross. You can't minister to me at a time when I'm depressed and down and see something I want in you, and you can't really tell me what I need to know.
I'm treading on thin ice if I do that. And so I will do that. I have had those conversations, and I will do that. But it's just like anything else. You got to know where you're at. You got to know who's around. And you got to use your head about it, because all it takes is one wrong person to overhear that conversation, and you're way out of line in that regard. The right answer in that situation is to refer that Marine to the chaplain so that he can go get his issues taken care of by a professional, by somebody whose job it is to do that. So that would be an acceptable answer, but it depends on your situation, who's standing around. The culture is one that it is making it right now increasingly difficult, but definitely not impossible.
Yeah. To share. Matt, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would say that's definitely my experience. One-on-one, it's certainly easier, and I think you can definitely do it one-on-one. And peer-to-peer, it's a lot easier as well.
So you couldn't talk in the way I've described it to a subordinate?
Well, it would, again, have to be the right situation. And I have gave a tract to a subordinate who was having some issues and about to be kicked out of the military. But that's about as far as I've gone. You could probably have that conversation, but again, you would potentially be putting yourself at risk if that conversation came out, for sure.
Mm.
But I've got to add, I think that I can speak for, I think, us, and I think for everyone here, that's a risk that we're willing to
Absolutely,
take.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when I taught school, and we were under the same type of regulations, but I didn't let that stop me. I witnessed to my students, and I mean, I thought, if they fire me, they fire me. You know, it was worth it to do that. And so I think that, you know, yes, they place themselves in a position of risk, but I think it's worth risking that for Christ. And I think I speak for you that's how you
do. And to be clear, we're not talking about violating any military regulation or anything like that. The regulations don't say you cannot talk to your subordinate about this, that, the other thing, or say certain words or anything like that.
Right.
The problem boils down to that the military is very mission focused, and anything that distracts from the mission, it wants to do away with. That conversation between you and the subordinate, when he comes to you and says, I need what you have, tell me about it, that doesn't distract from the mission. What distracts from it is when someone sees that and says, aha, I want to keep church and state separate, so I need to get this guy in trouble for saying something about his faith. When the military sees that, it's understandable for them to go, we need to make this situation go away. So even though you're allowed to have that conversation, don't have that conversation right now. Let's just get this thing out of the way.
So that one person or two or three that complain overrides your needs and your desire your faith.
It's not even ours. It's someone who can come to you and say, I want to talk to you about something. There are Christians in the military who would be very hesitant to do that, even though they can. they're very hesitant to do that because some heckler might have a veto over their ability to do that and it might impact their career or something like that. So in that regard, it does affect our ability to live out our faith.
Ariel expressed her views on that. Beth, what are yours?
As far as being willing to do what God wants, I think we have to take some risks for Christ. But be wise, you know. God tells us, Jesus tells us to be wise as serpent and innocent as doves. So, like Adam said, have some situational awareness. And ultimately, you know, you have to say, what's my 100-year goal, right? What's my 100-year goal in this? And look at the situation from that perspective.
Yeah, you don't want to rock the boat unless there's a really good reason and God will be glorified in that. You don't want to rock the boat just for the sake of rocking the boat.
Because let's say, you know, Christians in the military all get together and say, we want to be able to say we love Jesus up in front of a formation or something like that. And everybody does that. And the military says, that's great. We don't need your services anymore. And kicks everybody out. Then there's no Christians in the military anymore. That is not a goal that would be good.
We don't do Christ any favors.
Adassa, as a spouse, a wife, are you free to talk to other military wives about your faith? Could you have a Bible study in your home?
Yes,
could you do anything you feel led to do with spouses?
I think with, and I could be wrong on this, but I think with those that are lower ranking, I guess, or higher ranking than my husband's rank, I think we do have to be careful about...
Even as a wife?
Not just with anything in general, just hanging out with them one-on-one and stuff like that, which doesn't always present a problem. We just have to kind of be careful and tread carefully with that. Ariel and I, when we first met in Texas, actually started a Bible study in our house, and we invited most everyone that was there were military spouses, and it was a great Bible study. We've taken it all across the country.
Three different states. It's in three different states
right
now.
It's true. I just remember when we got to that duty station, I thought, okay, this is how the military is. He's still with the people that he knew from school. I'm in a new place with new people, and there are other wives in the same position that I'm in. I need some fellowship. I need some accountability. I need some women. So I just, Adassa and I were becoming friends at that point. We had met and kind of talked about it, like, hey, do you think this is something we should do? So we just approached some women and said, we're Christians. We would like to invite you to fellowship with us and to do a Bible study. I never did anything where I was actually teaching because I'm so not qualified to teach that. But we always had a book with a leader's guide. So I was just the facilitator of it. But we did bring a lot of people.
Yeah,
in,
a lot of the girls wanted to be a part of that.
Right.
I mean, it was a booming Bible study for a little while.
And it's blessed a lot of people. I mean, and so I feel like we're pretty free to do that.
I agree.
One of the things I ask for people for prayer about and pray for myself about all the time is just for the ability to, you know, stand up in the situations that we're talking about.
The courage that it
and
requires.
And be good examples for Christ, because it is a, you know, a difficult place to be a shining light. So just being able to do that and still being able to relate to the people that you're around.
Yeah.
The number one witness, the number one evangelistic tool that any Christian military has is just their life. I mean, you don't have to say anything because the military culture, like we said, is not necessarily God-honoring. So the person who is God-honoring in that culture does stand out. And so simply the courage to be able to do that will attract people and will be a light in that area.
You mentioned being off base and going to a church that's not part of the chaplaincy itself. You can do that, right? And you can worship any way you want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can share your faith anyway. You probably couldn't wear the uniform. Is that right?
Yeah, probably not. If you're going out on an evangelistic thing to go out and try to spread the gospel, you probably won't want to do it wearing a uniform. There's no need to do it wearing a uniform, honestly.
And we have had, Adam and I went through flight school together, and there's a big Bible study that we're all part of, OCF, Officer Christian Fellowship. You guys have probably been a part of it. So, you know, after work, there's a lot of Christians that would come together, do Bible studies, sing, and it was a great time. So there definitely is. There are a lot of Christians in the military.
And that's still possible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's possible. It's just you got to identify yourselves kind of at work and then actually meet you know, and gather somewhere else.
And in those situations, it's not uncommon to have a group of people sitting around in uniform, because that's what you do. You get off work, you're still in uniform, and you're sitting there reading the Bible, praying and singing in uniform together as military families and as service members.
What a great program. Don't you just love these families? If you'd like more information about the military or how to help your military family in your dealing with deployment, contact us at Family Talk at drjamesdobson.org or via phone at 877-732-6825. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of Dealing with Deployment, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.